record this. I probably ought to start this. So this is the introductory evening for the acceleration treatment practitioner training. The training takes 12 sessions, and it's on Wednesdays, and the first Wednesday of each month I have a workshop that I do, so it'll take more than 12 weeks to accomplish 12 sessions. It takes 12 sessions, and coming out the other end, you'll have not only the mental skill set, as in mentally know what you're doing, but you'll also have had the applicable energy pathways cleared out in your system to be able to do the treatments we'll be talking about. And I'll describe the treatments a little further in a second. But you'll have everything in place in terms of mentally knowing how to do it, as well as energetically being prepared to be able to do that for other people. And that'll all be in place by the time that we're done with those 12 sessions. Done it before. I know that it works. To do that, we actually have to clear energy pathways in you to a fairly deep level to get you out of the way of whatever, for lack of a better word, healing your clients or friends or family members or just other class members will be receptive and receiving. So we get you out of the way of that. So as much juice as they would need is able to flow through you. Now, as a side effect of clearing out those energy pathways, we're clearing out some stuff for you as well. It's just how it has to work. It's the only way to do it. When I first turned over the class that we call the healing class, when I first turned that over to the first set of brave souls that were going to teach it, I got to find out that something I had experienced was not unique to me. And that was that when I first started teaching classes, and it continues, each time I got ready to do a class, I would go through a major transformation in my own life, or one could call it a major cleanse, or just upheaval. All of those words would apply. But I would go through a major transformation in my own world as I prepared to teach classes. And it took me a while to figure out that what was going on was, if you thought of human beings as having elements of personality 1 through 100, I would have to have each of those elements as clear in me as what any member of the upcoming class needed. Now, it might be that their knob in childhood got stuck on 2, and maybe I was already running on 15, but if they were going to make it to 17, I had to make it from my 15 to 17 ahead of them. So I had to clear out what was going on in those areas of life for me. Wouldn't be the same thing, just the same area of life. Well, I had just thought that that was some neuroses that I had. Until we sent out the first set of teachers to teach the healing class and didn't pre-clear any of that for them any more than they had in their own personal studies. And all 6 of the first teachers got majorly whacked with psychological upheaval as their first classes came up, which fortunately for them were not huge classes. But we got to identify that, sure enough, that is exactly how it works on this energetic level. You actually have to clear you out of the way of whatever your students are going to have. So the flip side of the example would be if I have a student coming into class that their button got stuck at 17 and they're going to move up to 19, and my whole life I've casually gotten along with my button only being at 8, suddenly I had to clear me all the way to 19 by having deep realizations in my own world, typically brought about by surprises and disruption, so that I'd be ready to be able to work with them. The nice part about doing this as long as I have is I don't run into as many surprises anymore. But one of the pieces that evolved out of that was when we're preparing people to teach the healing class, it's no longer a couple of hours worth of conference and printed material. It's now a year-long training, and an intensive year-long training to prepare them as part of the preparation for them to be able to teach the healing class, so that we can pre-clear a whole bunch of that stuff so that they're ahead of most of their students and don't get whacked in the same way. Similar thing applies, but on a narrower field, with the acceleration treatments. Is in doing these treatments, we have to, in order to make you able to do them, we have to make you channels of sufficient energy to hold the energy state for your clients as they do their work. And so that's a portion of what goes on during the course of this training. The practitioner training, Life Insights practitioner trainings, so far, are never just here's how you hold your hand and here's the words you say, or here's the symbol you draw in the air or on their body or whatever. There's frequently some of that as to where you hold your hands. There's a whole lot of where you hold your mental focus, but there's also generating and creating your ability to sustain an energetic frequency or an energetic state that brings about the result that we want from that practice or from that training. So that's exactly what that's about. So one portion of the practitioner's training is elevating those energy channels in each member of the training so that they're able to sustain that. Now, you don't need to worry about that. It's not like you'll have to sit there in the room and go, oh man, how do I do this? How do I find that energy channel? That's my job. That's what I do, is I make sure that we make that happen, because that's going to be my name on the certificate at the end of the thing. I make sure that that happens. You don't have to figure it out. You just have to be willing to be willing. Would be the best description I could give it. Because, you know, you don't want to come into this thing and be wrestling with me over whether or not you want those energy channels to clear or whether or not you want your life to change. Because if we're wrestling, it's way less fun for me and a little less fun for you, actually. More to the point, if we have an agreement from a conscious level that you'll allow your deeper consciousness to cooperate with where we're going, then all of a sudden, sort of like, you know, once you're on the plane and you actually remembered where your seat was, you can take all that extra baggage and just set it out of the way, and it's not your concern. In a lot of cases, it's also lighter when you get it back, in this case, which is happens at the airports these days too, but that's more of a noticed a discussion between us and the TSA personnel who just really needed that. I was just traveling recently and I flew Southwest. I highly support Southwest. I tremendously support their marketing effort at not charging to check baggage. I so support it that they're the first airline I look at when I'm going to fly. But I noticed it was interesting when I was packing. It's like, not worth stealing, goes in the check bag. Worth stealing, goes in the carry-on. Not worth stealing, worth stealing. Not worth stealing, worth stealing. It's just, I figure, my dad always had a phrase of, don't tempt people beyond their ability to resist. You know? His phrase was, locks won't keep people out. Your best bet is to always make sure you don't tempt them beyond their ability to resist. And so that's what I do for the kind people at TSA who are keeping us all safe from shampoo and skin cleansers, is I try to make sure I don't check anything that looks too interesting or too valuable. Although I did notice that 2 years ago when I was traveling, I received as a gift a 50-foot HDMI cable, which even once you've coiled it around the entire inside of a suitcase is still a substantial bit. And I noticed that I did get a sweet little note from TSA that said, yeah, we had to get in your bag and find out what this was about. But they didn't bother to steal it, because it would be hard. Wouldn't fit in your pocket. Meanwhile, where were we? Ah, yeah, traveling. Put your luggage aside. So sorry for the next phrase, but it's where I've got to start. All of us have a core flow of life force energy. But as it turns out, we've got not just one flow in us. We're a whole series of different flows, not only through a primary set of energy centers called chakras, but we've got additional levels of flow. So the primary level of flow, the primary aspect of us, is a core flow of energy right up through the center of us that actually initiates in the core of the earth and completes in a connection to the invisible source. So we've got a core flow of energy that flows through us. It's a connected circuit from the center of the earth through us to source. It gets bent and constricted into patterns. And those patterns actually show up as the repeated patterns in our lives. So that when I see people who second guess themselves a lot, I'll see energy patterns that have a lot of coming up and then dipping back toward the previous chakra before they move on. When I see people that have a lot of confusion in some area, then I'm going to see a whole lot of places where it enters and exits a chakra numerous times before it finally moves on. Suddenly I have a flower. Let's see. But it's that core flow of energy through us that flows and gets bent and constricted into patterns, and those patterns literally show up as consciousness patterns, habitual patterns, or patterns of luck, for lack of a better word. This actually indicates our luck, what we're going to draw to us and what we're not going to draw to us. The world is a bizarre, bizarre place once you get over the fact that it's not real. No, that it is real. Both of those. Actually, you have to get over the fact that it's not real. I mean, interesting examples have been... I was doing a manifestation series, and I always like it when I can have stuff show up in my world that I can use as illustrations so that people get that it really works. And my favorite was, in one class, we were working particularly on money and cash flow and income. And during that series, one of the bizarre things that came along, I live in outer suburbia. Now, if I lived in the city or even in Berkeley, this would have made sense. It would have been normal. I live in outer suburbia. And all of a sudden, my neighbor came over and explained to me that the college kid that they were housing was going back to Japan for the summer. And we've got a, in our area, there's a law about you can't leave a car parked more than 72 hours without having moved it. And at that point in time, we had a very alert and conscientious neighbor, if any of y'all know what that translates to, who if she knew you and liked you and you went on vacation and your car was parked on the street, nothing would happen. But if you weren't her friend and your car was parked on the street 72 hours and 30 seconds, there would be notification given out. So my neighbor, feeling that she wasn't sure exactly where she and her college student stood in this other neighbor's grounds, said, you know, he's going to be gone for 3 months and having to move his car for every 72 hours. She's such a delight. She's this very refined, very elegant carried, very elegantly dressed woman from Italy. And there's that fun place where people that learn English as a second language just don't get the same charge on certain words that we do when we grew up with them and had our parents with a bar of soap at hand or whatever. So she's coming over in this nice business suit and she's saying, you know, he's going to be gone for 3 months and having to move his car every 72 hours is a royal pain in the ass. I'm not going to deal with that shit. Okay, what she really said is a pain in the neck. I'm not going to deal with that issue. Okay, in her head. And then she said, and I'm thinking, you're going to ask me to move his car? You're going to ask me if I'm okay with it? I'm okay if it stays there because it's kind of parked in the area between her house and mine. She said, so you really only use one side of your driveway. And I'm thinking, she's going to ask to put his car in my driveway? Till she started it with, so I told him if he just gave you like $300 that you'd probably let him park it in the other side of your driveway. And I said, yes. Now, if the world was a real place, I mean, I live in suburbia, shopping malls and large parking lots and so forth. And we're not even one of those neighborhoods where you're not allowed to park in a driveway or you're not allowed to park on the street. None of that. In a real world, there's no way in the world I would be earning money off of half of my driveway out of nowhere without me seeking it out. Coincidentally happening right while I'm teaching a class about manifesting income from surprise places. You get it? I mean, think how many of y'all have ever had anybody ask to rent half of your driveway? And the part that was more fun is he dropped a semester, and so the car actually stayed in my driveway for 9 months, and I went back to her and said, hey, you know, the original was 3 months, $300, 9 months is $900, and he paid me. So I earned $1,000. None of you work for the IRS, right? I received a legitimate non-taxable gift not earned income, of $1,000 for a driveway that would have otherwise sat empty. Although it was weird because it took about a month and a half of me coming around the corner, coming home and going, oh, who's here? Which is right up there is when you're headed to the garage to go get the big flashlight and the lantern because the power's out and the first thing you do is flip the light switch and go, hey. And it's always flip, hey, oh, yeah. It's not just flip, oh, yeah. It's flip, hey, oh, yeah, that's right. Anyway, so that was my driveway, too, for several months. Wow, who's here? Oh, yeah, never mind. It's that kid's car. The world is not a very real place. All of this energetic gets reflected in our real world, and all of this energetic reflects in our real world and creates our real world, and when we change it, stuff changes. Sometimes stuff changes psychologically in just a rapid, it was this way, now it's this way, kind of a transformation. I have one client that's just so sweet. She keeps sending me voicemails and notes letting me know what's going on. The first session I did with her, we worked together for an hour and a half. In that hour and a half, we moved numerous pieces, including unhooking some out-of-date traumatic stress from 15 years ago that she'd been to numerous therapists about because it happened as an industrial accident, an industrial explosion. And in an hour and a half, we unhooked that and a whole bunch of other little pieces just because they were close and they were easy to get at, and I just did them. That's just how I work. You know, it's like, great, we're working. Let's get everything we can get. And she was very cooperative, so we worked at a really deep level, and we moved all kinds of stuff. And I record when I do sessions with people, so I'd send her the tape, and then later found out through a mutual friend that she was listening to the tape at least once a day for months. But stuff started to ripple and happen, and a lot of the things that started to happen were things that it had seemed completely insoluble when she first came to me. These are not things she expected to change, one of which was a major abuse issue with a daughter that lived with her that she couldn't figure out any way that that was going to change. And about 60 days after our session, when her other daughter invited her to come live with them for a little while, she heard it for the first time. Later she found out her other daughter had invited her several times, but this was the first time she heard it as viable and possible, because after the accident she had vision impairment. She just didn't think she could move, and suddenly that seemed easy. Another friend invited her to go on a trip with her, and rather than her immediately concluding, oh, I'd be too much of a burden, she went, well, are you sure, and explained the burden, and her friend said, I've known you. You know, I don't understand what you're talking about. And she went. And then she went on another trip, and then she went on another trip. And she's done more travel in the last, I guess it's been almost 11 months now, since she and I worked together than she had done in 15 years previously. She moved to the other daughter. She completely put up some real boundaries with the daughter she'd been having difficulty with. That freaked that daughter out enough that she was clear enough with it that that daughter's actually cooperating with the boundaries. And in cooperating with the boundaries, accidentally actually making life changes. And it's all this ripple. It got initiated around the time she and I worked together, but what did it was the energy adjustments that we did had ripples of psychological adjustment that as she continued to practice with that, it opened up whole areas that had looked completely non-possible. I mean, these changes in her world were as unbelievably impossible as someone in a suburban neighborhood saying, I'd like to give you $1,000 to borrow your driveway for a little while. But just half of your driveway, I'll make sure we're out of the way, you know? It's all energetic, and when we make an energetic shift inside, it changes our outside. Now, in the acceleration treatments, there's a whole nother level of what we work with. And that is that there's two more significant energy flows, which are our platform of connection into the planet, or our platform of connection into being incarnate, or our platform of connection of being not only that consciousness aspect of us, that spiritual aspect of us, the soul, spirit, consciousness, essence, entity, not only that, but also being a physical presence on the planet. Did that track at all, or did it just jumble? Everybody's okay so far? Okay, cool. In an ideal form, we actually have an energy flow connected through both feet and both legs, as well as this core flow up the center of us. And what we actually generate is an inflow of raw material up the left, which as you look at it, it's the right, but he's facing you. He's she or whatever. An inflow to the right that fills an energy reservoir of our core essence, and then that creates an overflow of that charged energy out our right and into our reality, which forms what many people who read things psychically read as our physical plane or our physical aspect or our physical emanation. It radiates out an entire web of fine energy lines that basically turn all of reality into a refrigerator. And us becomes the very, very specific frequency refrigerator magnet. So if you could imagine very large refrigerator magnets that were only attracted to specific refrigerators, that's enough to make that analogy just start to die a slow and evil death. But that's kind of it. It's how we magnetize in. It was a shift in my reality that magnetized in the kid going home to Japan for 9 months and still having enough money to, you know, not being an impoverished college student like I was, but actually having enough money to go, yeah, you're right, I owe you, here's a check. And it was a good check. Not being the impoverished college student I was. I always wrote good checks. Sometimes they were good tomorrow if I get to the bank before you, but they were always good checks. It's that kind of a shift that then magnetizes in different events. Now, we do have to remember that the whole reality of Earth has its own energy flow. So it's not like most of us have sufficient juice to change the planet. We change our area of the planet. We change our bit of the planet. We change our portion of the planet. Most of us don't have sufficient juice to change the planet. You know? You know, out of all the cartoon series that have been out, there's only a few of them that have actually added new words to the English language. You got to give credit to the writer that gave Homer Simpson toy, because that's now in the Oxford English Dictionary, as in the exclamation one makes when one has made a mistake and has realized it. That's world changing, you know? They've changed the world in that way. So has Obama. So did George W. Bush, and you can have your own opinions as to what you would grade the changes, but both of them have changed the world. So has what's-his-name in Korea that's now bypassing two of his kids and trying to make his other kid to be a brilliant general at 19 or 12 or whatever, how old he is. Changing the world, having an effect. Most of us don't have that big a burden. We don't have to change the whole world. But if you thought of the flow of energy in reality in a sort of a Taoist concept, to where the flow of life becomes a river of energy. If you carried out that analogy of a river, if you've ever been on a river, you know there's some areas in the river where the current flows really beautifully, there's other areas in the river where the current bashes into rocks, and there's places in the river where the current becomes a backwater and an eddy and there's all kinds of gunk. You know, if you need to pick up twigs and sticks, they'll be in the back runner in the eddy. If you need to get from point A to point B, it's far easier if you're in the main flow of the current, not the part that's between the shore and the rocks. Yes, please. Thank you. Yes. Got it. Just to summarize the question, there are those times, how would I explain it to a client to notice whether it's because, good, I don't have to fix anything because everything's going easy now, or, everything's going easy now because the whole world's in a peaceful part of the flow, and when it smacks the rocks again, you're going to wish you fixed this while it was easy. I have to confess I primarily notice the difference between what's just my stuff and what's going on in the world by talking to people. So the primary place I notice it is by, well, not necessarily talking to people, but by listening. If everybody is sort of moving at a pace, and I'm moving at a pace, I try to get me to do my work then, because it's nice to do it, you know, sort of like it's nice to do your exercises when you're not under live ammunition. But I don't always succeed. Sometimes I'm also just the, let me just take the break. But then I watch, like, I don't know how many of y'all have been on the road today, but I had one appointment that I had to go to today that's a 10-minute drive from my house. And then did the appointment and a 10-minute drive home. So in that net 20 minutes of driving, in 20 minutes of driving, I saw probably six or maybe eight. Wow. Ooh, I can't believe. Oh, my God. Amazings. That tells me that the world was flowing on overdrive, hectic, crazy today. Because these were things like two people doing this into an intersection, one turning right, one turning left, and both of them so belligerent that they were going to be the one to go that they darn near. And this is at stop signs. This is not like at highway speeds where they couldn't control it. This is both of them just so that you ended up with two cars V'd into a lane, not hitting each other, but neither one giving way so they could get out of the way until they made sure the other knew they were wrong. Now, that's fairly impressive. And that was just one of about eight of those that I saw along the way, including the guy that was from midway in this lane to midway in that lane and periodically this lane and from as fast as the rest of traffic to way slower than the rest of traffic because he was carrying on a one-handed conversation with the cell phone he was holding to his head and a one-handed argument with the guy that was in the truck, and I don't know what he was steering with. I don't want to know. I'm assuming it was that other hand periodically or a knee, but this was not a pickup truck. This was a big commercial truck with a trailer behind it, and it's like, you know, and this was with cars next to him that were having to, like, duck and dodge. And so, and it was like, that was two. They weren't just like, oh, gosh, they didn't let somebody merge. No, these were big, wows, that I, and eight of them in 20 minutes, it's a tricky day out. I have been driving hyper alert because I have to admit one of the eight was me, which really told me the world must be crazy when my driving's whacked. But I got so nervous about getting around the crazy truck driver that I didn't allow enough time to get around. Because, of course, as I went to go around him, that woke him up that he was going slowly. And he, of course, sped up right with me on the highway. And that left me very narrow window to go ahead and make my exit. So it was like, oh, God, I was one of them. It wasn't as bad as the others, but it was still, for me, kind of like, wow, it's less normal than I usually drive. If I'm being crazy, I better really watch them because it's a crazy day out. So I'll even just observe it from my surroundings and notice when people are hyper or frantic. You know, all you have to do is stand in line at the grocery store or the bank for a few minutes and you can get a pretty good read on where people are. Did that answer your question? That's how I do it. And then I step back and I really take a look of, wait a minute, what's coming up for me right now? Is it any different than yesterday? Am I experiencing it differently than yesterday? And if the answer is it's the same stuff, different day, but different, I figure it's external effect. Did that answer your question? Cool, thanks. So if you think of all of reality as a flow like a river, where there's overall segments of the river where the river's narrow and the water's turbulent, or where the river's really wide and the water's slow, to where everything's that way, but there's also currents within the river and then obstacles within the river. As we shift and change this energy broadcast we're creating, it draws us toward the part of the flow that matches what we're broadcasting. So if we're broadcasting a major crunch and a major limitation or a major blockage, we'll end up experiencing all kinds of stuff around us that's crunched or blocked or difficult or challenged. You know, the boss will be the bigger jerk or the client's the worser jerk, or all of a sudden out of nowhere we get, you know, four different banks that remembered our numbers or whatever it is. And it's that abstract. I mean, you got to remember, it's as abstract as somebody renting a driveway in suburbia. It's that all of a sudden the mail will come in that will have odd challenges in it, or all of a sudden people will have odd challenges in with it, or all of a sudden it'll be one simple question that you go to ask You know, you call up to ask your bank one question about your credit card, and suddenly that happens to be the person that's decided today's the day that they're going to run a check on everything and everybody's record of anybody that asked them a question. And you called up to say, gee, I don't know what this one transaction was. And their answer is, gosh, I've just looked, and 12 years ago you were late on a payment to Sears and Roebuck, so I'm really sorry, but we're going to have to quadruple your interest rate. And by the way, we're also cutting your credit limit, so now you're over limit, so I'm going to have to hit you with an over limit fee. Those kinds of days, you know, in modern America, as life will go, what you're radiating is where you end up in the flow of things. Sorry for the example. Don't mean to terrify anybody. Just happens to be I know somebody that experienced that. Wasn't me. Thank goodness. But it sure made me think, I don't think I'm going to call my credit card company very often. It was not exactly that, but it was very close to that. Yeah, I get enough clients, I get lots of stories. I'll just leave it to one. How we're radiating shifts which part of that flow we're in. So there's an overview of the flow that maybe the whole river's calm, but there's also the currents within it, and that's what we're doing. So we don't have to change the world, most of us, thank goodness. We don't have to try and figure out, well, what's my broadcast supposed to be so that I'm cooperating and coordinating with the highest purposes of God for all of earth and creation, here, now, before, and beyond, most of us. We're just shifting our own energy flow and our own energy state. Now, most of us have a tendency to, however we carry our spiritual part, most of us have a tendency to carry that spiritual part and physical life separately within ourselves. Some of us that do spiritual studies for a while, we develop an even bigger separation. I remember Ram Dass talking about the path of renunciation, where he said, I got sort of off track for a while to where I would think that, ah, I get it. I do the things that make me feel really high, and then I avoid the things that bring me down, like my parents who would say terrible things like, say, Doc, have you got a job yet? That would bring me down, so I had to avoid my parents. You know, he said, except I would run into these contrasts because I would be sitting up in my attic, he said, where I meditated, and I'd have this exquisite spiritual meditation. And at that point, I was sort of renouncing the path of income. And so he said, I had this sort of older car that every time you wanted to go anywhere, the first thing you had to do was open the hood and open the oil thing and put oil in it before you could drive it anywhere. It used more oil than it used gas. So I would go from this exquisite meditation to cars that use oil have exceptionally dirty engines. So I'd go from this exquisite meditation to open the hood and have my hands in this incredibly dirty engine and this car that was not what cars might be in an ideal state. And I'd have to try and balance that contrast. And he said, and finally I had to realize that I had to recognize both my physical reality and my spiritual reality as being two parts of one thing. Well, most of us have a tendency to have that contemplated aspect of ourselves or the philosophical aspect of ourselves or the spiritual aspect of ourselves or the meditative aspect of ourselves or the feeling of spiritual progress separated out from our physical reality. When we do the healing class, which we also have that class coming up, there's some flyers for it over there. When we do the healing class, one of the first things that we teach in that class is we retrain the central core energy flow, so that people actually have energy and aliveness flowing in the chakras or energy centers that have to do with real life, so that they're not separating out to having this fabulous progressing spiritual life and having their real life be experienced like some big bag that they have to drag along behind them, but that it actually becomes joined again. Within the acceleration treatments, what we then do is we actually open up the channel in that right leg so that yeah, okay, I'm facing this. I got confused. I'm used to facing the client. I'm facing the same direction as the client. Threw me off. Gosh, his right's on the same side as my right. How confusing. We open up that channel in the right leg so that we've reconnected this spiritual being into their flow of flowing their core essence energy to create this field around them so that they're not merely magnetizing stuff that matches their stuff in the way. Because there's an inner field to that that radiates all the time from all this patterning and stuff. That's got its own bits and chunks of energy and with their own magnetism. And no matter how you run away from your own energy, these guys all magnetize at the same level. They're small, but they're all magnetized at the same level. If you dump your energy, if you drop your energy, they keep magnetizing at the same level. So it's sort of like, great example. When you've had your car and you've had all the background and road noise and you've had your radio adjusted so that it compensates for all the background and road noise, and then you get out of your car and you go and you do something else and you haven't had that constant din, and then you get back and you turn on your key in the car only to find out that some gremlin turned your radio up to unbelievably loud. So you turn it back down till you get out on the road. Now you've got all the road noise and you gradually creep the radio back up to the same level it was before. It's just, well, the road noise stays the same. So you can have your radio turned way down. The road noise stays the same. You just don't hear the radio anymore. You can have your radio turned up to where that's the primary thing you hear. The road noise stays the same, but the primary thing you're hearing is your tunes or your self-help tape or whatever you listen to when you turn up your radio, your political discussions. In us, the broadcast of the patterns, the lessons, the karma, that stuff, that magnetizes at the same level all the time. If you drop your spiritual energy, then all you see is the stuff in the way shows up and your life turns to not gold. Sort of the opposite of the Midas touch. But when you crank that spiritual, that physical, that consciousness level energy back up again, what you want is you want to be opening up that pure core essence of you and having more of that be the frequency broadcasting around you so that you've turned your tunes up louder than the road noise. You're still going to have the other stuff show up, but quite frankly, when your energy's expanded out to where you've got lots of good stuff showing up and then this thing shows up, it's more like a, wow, that's a surprise, as opposed to, oh God, I'll never survive. Get it? And the interesting part is even when it shows up, usually the path to solution's more available. Anytime you can't find options or solutions, it does not mean there are no options or solutions. It actually means your energy's low. Elevate your energy, just like the client I was talking about. All of a sudden, she saw all kinds of options that she hadn't seen before. She was sure this was the first time that other daughter had ever asked her to move out there. It wasn't. The other daughter had been asking her steadily for a couple of years. But it was the first time she heard it as viable. And then acted on it. And it turned out it was viable. In fact, it worked out well. They're having a great time, as a matter of fact. She's spending more time with that set of grandkids. The kids are a blast. They're responding well. She's traveling. She's doing all kinds of stuff she hadn't done. Because we got her energy up, suddenly she could see options she hadn't seen before. And the interesting part is some of those options made changes. The one daughter she'd been fighting with forever, not only does she not live with her, but that daughter actually recognized the boundaries and has started making some changes because she noticed that she didn't like it when she was outside the boundaries, when she wasn't pushing against mom, when she was only pushing on her. So sometimes change ripples from us, but not our job. Our job is us. So what we do in these acceleration treatments is we actually open that right leg channel to allow the energy sweetened by that core essence or attuned to the who we really are part to be radiating out, changing our magnetism. We also open a left leg channel to allow that physical level energy to be flowing in so that we're not running off of our own batteries, but we're actually running off of external power, as it were. We're plugged in rather than running on batteries. We set this all the way through the whole system as we do it, and then we work it down to a cellular level so that our own system is bringing us back toward that new energy state we just created rather than us trying to maintain the new energy. It would be like if I could invent something that, I don't know, you drink a glass of orange pop, and then all of a sudden it not only makes all of the nicotine receptors in your body really happy, so they're not looking for nicotine at all, but it also makes your body have a physical revulsion to even the appearance of cigarettes. So that not only would you then not have the drag toward wanting to continue a cigarette habit if you'd wanted it, but your own body would be helping you not do it as opposed to pulling you toward it. Did that make sense? So we rework the whole system so that the system's supporting the aligned state, the energized state, as opposed to you trying to, I'm going to stay in an energized state, I'm going to stay in an energized state, oh, look, ugly thing, I'm going to stay in an energized state, I'm going to stay, oh, you know. The system itself is actually supporting that progress. It's what the treatments are about. Yes, please. That would be the word attention in my vocabulary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sufis use that word attention. I would use it as consciousness energy points. So it's not energy flow. It's just like your computer does not have a limited amount of electricity from the wall, but it's got a limited amount of computational points. So if you load it up with all kinds of things going on in the background, which unfortunately so many software packages do, you know, they pre-start themselves because they know you don't want to wait 10 seconds for them to start. You'd rather load your machine and wait 40 seconds for anything else you're trying to do. But if you load up all of that computation, then pretty soon there's none of it left to, you know, show you the latest funny cartoon that somebody just sent you. So it's computational units. So the Sufis use the word attention. I would call it energy consciousness units. And yeah, we have a certain amount of that. And when it gets stuck, such as this client that had this traumatic experience in a work accident, a whole lot of her consciousness or her attention stayed trying to figure out what she should have done differently to be ready for the next time that she was working in a factory where it exploded, which is funny. I mean, I use the example of, I noticed for a long time there was just a pickup game of football that some friends of mine and I played against some kids that we saw because we were just out goofing around in this field, throwing a ball. They shut up. Let's play 4-on-4. We played 4-on-4, and we got our behinds handed to us. From what I later figured out, was probably we were in a high school field, was probably that previous senior year's quarterback and three of his close friends had just dropped by to warm up, and there we were. You know, thank God they didn't put any money down. But we definitely psychologically got our behinds handed to us and our testicles removed. I found myself years later figuring out strategies we could have used that would have used the skill set we had that would. Now, one, I'm never going to be playing tackle football with anyone between the ages of 18 and dead, in all probability, ever again. I don't anticipate. I might play touch football. I do not anticipate playing tackle football ever again. Just don't expect it to happen. And yet there would be my mind figuring out what to do if I was playing those four guys again. And that's what happens when stuff gets stuck, is it just replays and replays till you catch it and dismantle it and interrupt it. So part of the treatments, we actually catch some of that stuff and we dismantle it. It's built in the treatment. You've seen that happen. But that's what she's talking about with a limited number of of energy. It's actually a limited number of units of attention. Okay. Several answers to that, because we've got a tricky word that gets used lots of ways. So, energy. Energy can mean the net sum glucose available units in my muscular system of my physical body. Energy can mean the net sum total of my recent rest and sleep and the depth at which I've rested. Energy can mean the amount of, call it, etheric energy that I'm running through my energy field at any time. It's got a lot of definitions to the term. Energy could be used where I use the word attention, so we have to differentiate. Physically tired is physically tired. However, there are energetic habits that we get into. Memorize the river. I know, tough assignment to just, because I'll point to it later and it won't be there anymore. I'll just go, remember this part, and remember. We can get into energetic habits. Where what we literally do is perceive illness, disease, vacancy, loss, helplessness, discomfort in another human being that we care about, and our habit of caring gets translated to us taking, I used blue before, us taking this core flow of life force energy that's ours and bending it and plugging it into them in order to feed more of that energy into them with the ideal that we'll get them broken through so that they'll be reconnected in their circuit to source and earth and that they'll flow, be uplifted, or it's also called healing. But we'll just think of it as caring, and we'll literally extend ourselves out to them and try to literally take on and carry a portion of their psychological, emotional, traumatic burden for them, as if that was a limited time offer, and it usually isn't, because then we never remember to take it back again. So there is a very definite place where we extend ourselves out to others energetically. The other place that we'll do that is if we're unsure of ourselves, we'll actually then push our energy flow out in front of us because we're hesitant. So it's almost like we're energetically white caning our way through the world so that anything that's coming in from our outside world is going to impact our energy before it ever gets to us. Therefore, they won't associate it to us, and they'll think we're okay, and we'll have actually had time to adjust so that we'll be okay by the time we're interacting with them, so that we'll shove our energy out in front. And that's exhausting. It makes being out in the world or being around other people burn up a whole lot of until finally all you want to do, just let me get away. Even with all of my practices, there are periodically times where I need to not be surrounded by clients. I go hide out. I mean, it sounds really funny, this vacation I just took recently. It's exhausting. It's a tremendous amount of run, walk, do. But it's totally different than this world, and so it's like, it's a break because none of them expect me to fix them. And I don't. I just watch them. It's very entertaining. In fact, most of them would be really suspicious of me if I even tried to tell them what I really do. So I don't. Does that answer your question? Yeah. First piece, step your energy back inside yourself. Second piece, adopt a meditative practice so that you're regularly coming back to center. Third piece, notice when you've stretched out to other people and let them go and come back to yourself. And fourth piece, adopt a meditative practice so that you're recharging your batteries. Other questions? Yes, please. Pushing my energy out in front of myself? Yeah, you don't do it. Would you like me to give you more explanation than that? Where you would notice it, yeah, right. Where you would, it's not going to show up in these, but yeah. Where you would notice it, I happen to have information about this individual, and I know that she interacts with people. Where you would notice it is when you can almost feel the people and their worries and their concerns and their urgency that you be urgent about their concern coming at you before they ever get there, and it's just overpowering that, you know, for crying out loud, quit pushing on me, I'm going to do a good job. Do you get it? Yeah, that's when they do that. You don't do it. Just, you could. Just, you know, it's one bad habit you missed so far, but, you know, I'm always willing to assume that any bad habit I missed earlier in life, I'll be able to develop later if I really want it. And so far, I've been right. Except about the really want it part. Yeah, that makes sense. So it's just literally what people do when they're doing that. Inside, it has a feeling of urgency. They're urgent about what they're trying to do. They're urgent about what they're trying to convey. They're urgent about what they're trying to get across to people. They're urgent about whether or not they'll be okay in this circumstance. They're urgent enough about how other people will take them. Inside, it has an internal sensation of urgent and trying to anticipate. But that's different than inside myself frantically trying to anticipate. It's a whole feeling of extended out. Probably more like when you've called them, you're having so little belief that this person's going to get that what you're telling them is important and that they're going to do anything about it, that you're really revved up to try and make sure you get it across to them. I have one client that is very interesting. She's had some physical issues that have required physicians. And I have to do coaching with her every time she's going to go to a doctor. because I've got a coacher on, only tell the doctor these three sentences. Because if I don't, she will physical history and metaphysical history tell him everything from when she was 12 that looked anything like this bruise that she has on her leg now at the age of 71. Well, I don't know if this could have affected it, but when I was 12, I was ice skating and I fell. And then I've had this spiritual thing with my legs. And it took me a while to figure out that was going on until the second time she came back and told me what the doctor said. And I had to like go psychically check into the doctor and see what the heck. And all I see, yeah. And then I started coaching her. These three sentences, write them down. Only say them. Do not say anything else. Every other question that he asks is yes or no or here or there. That's your whole answer. And ever since then, it's worked much better when she has to see that they actually dial in on what we wanted them to focus on. Don't tell them you coughed once when you were 12 and now you're coughing again. It's not going to take them in the right direction. I need you to get antibiotics for this lung infection. Didn't start when you were 12, I promise. You know, that sort of. But she gets just so urgent to make sure the doctor's got all the information that, yeah, they get way more. Yes. Okay, cool. So what I'd like to do now is we're going to go through a treatment because then it'll be easier for me to talk about it. Okay? So your job for us to do that is I'd like you to choose an area of life in which you've either felt that you consistently run into a blockage or an area of self where you've consistently felt as if you get in your own way in that area of life. So either an area of life where it just seems like you keep running into a limitation, we'll even call it a blockage, where you keep running into a limitation that's not been advantageous that you can tell or that you would prefer, or an area of self where in this area of life you run into you and notice that it's you that stops you up. So I'm going to get a little more water in my teacup, and you guys can think on that one, and then we'll actually do the treatment.